You recognize, of course, that what we call the Beatitudes. There's a version in Matthew which is, I guess, more familiar, and this version in Luke. Matthew has Jesus starting out his ministry on a mountain, like Moses. Luke sets it on the plain. And most scholars believe that the Lucan version is probably closer to what Jesus actually said, for all kinds of reasons we don't have to go into. And the differences are fairly notable. You remember that Matthew begins, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit." That's not what Luke says. He just says, "Blessed are those who are hungry. Blessed are you who are poor." And instead of getting eight, "Blessed are you," blah, 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 he has these four blessings and then the four woes. So it's an appeal to us, I think, especially on the verge of Lent and especially in the midst of the world that we live in, Iraq and Haiti and Afghanistan and the Congo and God knows how many other wars, to revisit the way we live and our kind of expectations of life and where we're supposed to be in life. What we own, what we desire, how carefully we tread upon this very fragile planet. Because we really are called to poverty, not some poverty in some kind of idealistic way, but to a disencumbering ourselves from the kind of expectations that the world gives us whereby we judge success. Again, the statistics, I ran across them again this past week, it just flummoxed me that we in North America use 50 times the energy that somebody in Africa does. 50 times, that's a lot. And we really are accustomed to judge ourselves, I think, in terms of what we own or how economically secure we are. And Jesus calls us to this terrible insecurity. But there's more at stake than that. What constitutes a world in which these disparities exist, these profound disparities exist between we, the haves and the have-nots, who constitute most of the world population? As I think I've said before, there's a major new strain in biblical scholarship which plays the New Testament off against the empire. The empire understood not just as a political reality, but as a social reality, economic reality. That we live in an imperial world where necessarily there are going to be disparities between the haves and the have-nots. It's inescapable. It's built into the very fabric of the way we look at the world, the way the world is supposed to work. What Jesus did, what Paul did, what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John did, what all these New Testament writers did, was precisely, and this is implicit, and so it may not stand out so clearly, live in a way that protests the power of empire, whether economic, political, so on and so on. Our lives are an extended alternative to the way the world judges success, the way we assess ourselves. And at the beginning of Lent, I think it's a good time to kind of sit back and reassess where we are and who we are and who we think we ought to be in the world. Because this version of the Beatitude links absolutely with what Paul is talking about when he's talking about the resurrection of the dead to the Corinthians. The Corinthians were, of course, Greeks, and they did not believe in the resurrection of the dead, most of them. They thought it would be a bad idea because they wanted to get rid of the body as soon as they could. But the Jews did not see things that way. They saw that the human being was essentially a bodily being. It was not this nice, neat division to souls and bodies. And so it raises the question, why did God raise this man, Jesus? I mean, it's possible to read this text from Paul and say, oh, good, I'm not going to die forever. I'm going to survive, you know, meet my buds in heaven or wherever. But that's not what Paul's talking about. He says, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. Your faith that what? That the empire will not have the last word in our lives. That the radical, profound injustices which mark human life are not going to be the last word. And so it's not just some kind of consolation as to the terror I feel at the prospect of dying and extinction. But rather, it's a much larger view of things. It's how is reality constituted? What does God really want from us and our place in the world? He wants what Jesus had. This enormous sensitivity to the have-nots. Pervasive sensitivity. The enactment of that sensitivity in his own life. Jesus, the poor man. I think this is very hard for us. I think the powers of the empire, which are expressed in ads and TV and politics and a simple way of construing the world in which oppression is inevitable, inescapable. So we're called, first of all, to see that the world is built on this massive base of oppressive forces, wherein somebody's going to get squished. Most of the people are going to get squished. And we can simply walk away with pure consciences because we ignored them. Jesus did not ignore anybody. And that's why God, in raising Jesus from the dead, made this absolute statement to us who believe that the empire will not have the last word. That injustice is not the final state of things. That the poor really are blessed. That the hungry really are blessed. That those who suffer for following Jesus, that those are the people that God is going to acknowledge by raising from the dead. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, then we're of all people most to be pitied. Well, if we really do believe that justice is going to be done and it's not going to be done because the empire will have the last word, well, we ought to pack it in. We ought to pack it in and check our stock portfolios and our holdings and all the rest of this stuff to see that we're okay. So it's extremely important that we know that what Paul's getting at when he said, if Jesus isn't raised from the dead, then the world is ultimately unjust. That unfairness, inequality, the situation of those endlessly numerous, nameless poor who die under the heel of oppression of all sorts, they really will have died in vain. And Paul's saying, no, that's not the case. If we believe that God has raised this man, Jesus, then, as Martin Luther King said, the arc, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it tends toward justice. Only a Christian man could say that.